Almost 96% of our patient population is on an electronic health system of one type or another. Now we're moving into connectivity. How do you use the data and the information in there to improve treatment of the patients?
That was the voice of Bob Martin, the Chief Information Officer for WellPath, talking about how his company's work with individuals in the justice system is leading the way in healthcare innovation. You're listening to How I Transform This, presented by Versus 12. Versus 12 is the award-winning Salesforce Gold consulting partner focused on healthcare innovation nationwide. In this episode, Bob provides perspective on a corner of the healthcare industry that most people may not think about, and he explains how Salesforce and other technologies are helping WellPath provide better outcomes for patients.
We never want the IT organization to be a limiting factor on the opportunities that the business has or our opportunities to treat patients in a compassionate and correct way.
I'm your host, Clark Buckner, and along with Versus 12 founder and CEO Tammy Hawes, each episode we'll be seeking out healthcare technology industry leaders, exploring stories of success through the transformation of healthcare. For more stories like this, be sure to visit versus12.com/podcast. Now let's jump in.
My name is Bob Martin. I'm the Chief Information Officer for WellPath here in Nashville.
Welcome to the studio, and we can't wait to hear your story on how I transform this.
And Bob, I'm especially happy to have you on the podcast, because there are so many different aspects of healthcare, and the industry that you're in is probably a concept that most people haven't thought about when they think about healthcare. So I'm excited to hear you talk about that.
Yes, let's start off with just what is the industry, and then let's hear a little what we like to call past, present, future of how you found your way into this, what today looks like, and maybe we can also talk a little about what the future may hold.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, many people don't even understand that this is a industry and that this is a thing. So we serve a justice-served population of patients that in one way or another intersect with the justice system, whether that be jails, prisons, forensic mental health, or other type of civil commitments. So we provide all kinds of healthcare, the normal somatic healthcare that we kind of think of as going to our neighborhood doctor and getting treatment, to addiction treatments, to withdrawal, and mental health services.
Wow.
So how long has WellPath been around?
WellPath was founded in October of 2003, so almost 16 years ago.
How did you find your way into this space?
So I worked with two incredibly smart people, and they found the space. So, Jerry Boyle was the founder of our company, and he had a history in this industry and had joined as CEO of a company where I was already working. Another fella, Patrick Kaminsky, who had mutual friends with us, joined that business as a business development person. And an opportunity arose with a single client in another state. And Jerry and Patrick put that transaction together and sold that account. And luckily enough, they called me and asked me to join in and help out. So it's been a nice little ride since then. And we built a pretty nice company around that idea.
So that was a totally different type of idea of how to provide healthcare to these customers. Mm-hmm. Before you guys were in existence, how did these customers serve their populations with healthcare?
The industry has been around a while since the Supreme Court decision back in the 70s determined that an incarcerated individual had a right to health care while they're incarcerated. And it's just is the one population that has a constitutional right to health care. And so the industry was born out of that Supreme Court case. There's various companies that have kind of come and gone from this industry, and about 50% is outsourced to private entities. The other is government provided. So they're government employees, state employees, county employees providing this care.
So there's probably not a whole lot of packages off the shelf that you can implement from soup to nuts
No, that is true, right? Yeah. That is true. And when we started, email was a foreign concept into corrections. So many of our early customers did not have the internet, and it would be stopped for security reasons. We can't have that in here. It's too unsafe. Somebody may do something bad with that. So we had lots of barriers to entry of technology. There weren't very many desktop computers. There's certainly no mobility going on, and tons of just barriers that we had to overcome to bring technology in. We started with electronic medical records, which were in their infancy back in the early 2000s, and kind of built it out from there. The medical record gave us a lot of data to make good decisions and manage the complex treatments that go on in corrections. Many people don't understand the acuity and the illness level of the population, right? That is a much higher incidence of mental health issues, much higher incidence of HIV, hepatitis, all of those kinds of things that are on the inside. So the technology had a role to play. And for us, and was how do we differentiate ourselves from everybody else? Everybody can hire the same nurse, they can hire the same doctors, they can get the same people in there, but it's the tools and technology that can make the difference and make your company different than the others. And I think that's still true today.
So WellPath has customers in a lot of states, and you have to secure clinical resources in a lot of different states, and there's different laws and regulation, and it sounds extremely complex.
That's what my mother says too. I don't think about it that way.
How do you describe what you do to your mother?
I do IT work, right?
Okay. I work with computers.
We just kind of keep it with that, right? But yeah, I don't think about it that way because, as you know, when you grow up with a business, being there, you know, kind of as the business is founded, you know, you just have to kind of figure out how to scale yourself with the business, that your skills stay sharp, that you can kind of think two or three steps ahead of what's the next step for the business, and kind of make sure, from my perspective, that the technology is there and the systems and the support processes are there to facilitate that growth. We never want the IT organization to be a limiting factor on the opportunities that the business has or our opportunities to treat patients in a compassionate and correct way.
It's really helpful to hear your past and how you found this. And of course, what you're saying is so important, providing this care and using technology to deliver this care at scale. And you being CIO at WellPath, there's a lot of people, a lot of systems that you're over. And maybe we can talk a little about some of the trends, some of the challenges that you're seeing directly being a CIO. And then maybe we can talk about some of the ways to overcome those challenges.
So from a patient care standpoint, that's the way I approach this, as a patient care. And our primary duty is to make sure the patients are taken care of, that it's the appropriate and correct care for their condition and their situation. So the EHRs are kind of the entry point to that. It's a pretty mature technology at this point. There's not a lot of difference between one or the other. We say it's like ice cream, it's personal preference. And so almost 96% of our patient population is on an electronic health system of one type or another. Now we're moving into connectivity, is how do you use the data and the information in there to improve treatment of the patients? We have this kind of situation, especially in the jails, what we call frequent flyers, the folks who come in, they're in the jail for a short amount of time and then released and then back in. But what can happen during that time while they're not incarcerated can be very impactful to their reincarceration. And so today it's about data with health information exchanges in the states where that exists. We want to plug into those health information exchanges so that the treatments that are done inside the facility are available to the parties on the outside of the facility. And same when they are reincarcerated, that we can go to the health information exchange, bring in those lab records and those prescription drug records and other treatment records that we wouldn't have had on the outside. So sharing of information and collaborating is really important to us, and it's really important to the patients. Secondly is the opiate crisis, right? There's this crisis that you can't listen to anything or be aware that that's not going on in this country. So in terms of medical technology, this concept of medication-assisted therapies is out there, where there are treatments that we can provide that can help the patient overcome that addiction. The computer technology has a role to play with that. A, identifying those patients, B, bringing in their past medical history, and then providing decision support to the clinicians in terms of which therapies are appropriate for that patient. And then we bring those therapies into the jail or the prison so that the patient doesn't have to go somewhere else, or we remove the barriers to that patient being able to be treated inside. Third is withdrawal. When you come into the jail and you're arrested, if you are dependent on alcohol or other drugs, you're cold turkey right away, right? Those things aren't available inside of a jail. And so many, many patients will go through withdrawal. And so we treat that withdrawal in a compassionate way. And we have a technology, a tablet product that is used by the clinicians in those facilities,
a handheld tablet
that guides them through those treatments, because there's both subjective and objective measures that they have to collect. And the tool gives them decision support of increasing or decreasing medications, mental health referrals, and those kinds of treatments inside the facility.
It's fascinating to me that you can totally manage that patient population, really, and look at them as a whole person and every care. It's proof that it can be done in other patient populations because you've done it, but you've made a very proactive, intentional path to do that and do that with technology.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we want our mission to be that we take care of every patient as if they were a member of our family. You know, if it was a member of our family in there, what would we want to occur? And so we want to ask ourselves that question. We've seen some interviews. We get love letters, what I call love letters. We get thank you notes from our patients from time to time thanking us. And kind of this theme that emerges is, no one's treated me this way since my mother bandaged up my owie as a child, right? This theme of compassionate care for folks that are incarcerated. And, you know, we think that that'll have a long-term impact on that patient and the way they view their own health and the way they view taking care of themselves once they're released.
And the way they acclimate back into society.
For sure. For sure. You know, a sick person with no access to care is not great for our society, and the whole society is struggling with that, you know, and how we pay for all that. In the incarcerated population, we have a lot more ability to impact that and remove those other barriers. You know, whether it's the complexity when you're on the outside, it can be complex to make a doctor's appointment or get a prescription filled at a pharmacy. Those are kind of foreign concepts to some of the folks out there that we just take for granted every day. So in a jail or a prison, a nurse will bring you the pill and deliver it to you and help you take that pill and explain to you why it's important that you take it every day and not skip. So just the intensity and the level of care that's available is much higher.
So to provide those services at scale in all the different states that you're in and all the different customers you are serving, you have to have a fairly robust corporate IT infrastructure and also back office systems to manage the business side of that.
For sure.
And obviously, we're extremely happy that WellPath purchased our V12 network tool to help manage your contracts and your provider directory. But you're doing all different kinds of technology at the back office to support the scale that you need to, and to support those clinicians out in the field too. Can you talk to that?
For sure, in several different ways. One is, you mentioned the V12 network, which is a great tool for us for managing our provider network. When we talk about provider network, that's when the level of care that we're providing in the facility isn't sufficient for an individual patient case, and they need to leave the facility for a specialty consult or an inpatient visit or even an emergency room visit. And so our company contracts with providers all over the country to provide that care. Same as like a Cigna or Aetna Blue Cross would contract, we build our own network. we have many advantages in that, both through legislation and because our patients don't have to pay deductibles and co-pays and things like that, right? So we can get very favorable network access for our patients in the community. And so we build those networks and we use the V12 and Salesforce as our back end for reaching out to those specialty providers. And then we're in the process of integrating that into our EHR system so that when a consult is needed or referral is needed offsite, we can connect into that provider directory, know who the specialists are in the community that we're contracted with, and get access for that patient to that provider. And then on the back end, we take care of the payment of that claim and the processing of all of that. So the patient isn't burdened with any of those things, or our clients for that matter. And then one of the things that's plagued outsourcing contracts or for-profit healthcare agreements is the risk management that goes around with that. And traditionally, the industry has kind of held the data really close and didn't share. So the customer's not always aware of what is going on both clinically and operationally in the facility. They rely on going to someone and asking, right? Well, how many people we got in the hospital today? You know, have we had any complex cases come in today? That kind of oral tradition of management, which is great, and it's important to have that communication. But through our systems, we can provide transparency to our clients. So they can go into our portal that's built on the Salesforce Community Platform and see how many people are in the hospital, see what the trends of our ERs or outpatient visits have been, see our compliance statistics around how long does it take us to screen a patient when they come in from the time they're incarcerated until the time that they've been reviewed and assessed for entry into the facility is a very important. And so part of that is transparency with our clients. So they see the data. If it's taking 2 hours, we can then work with them on how to get it down to an hour, how to get to an hour and a half, but improve it by sharing that information. Same with chronic cares or med passes and things like that. We pass millions of pills a day. Millions of medications are administered around the country in our facilities. We track every one of those pills through our technology, and we assess. We want to make sure that 100% of those pills are delivered to the people that need them. So we track that, and we provide that data to our client and our leaders on the sites through a dashboard where they have a little dial. We see where we're at, right? We see who we've missed. If we can't find somebody or they're out in court or something like that, we need to make arrangements so that when they come back, that they can get their medications that day. Because that's how people get well, is they take their medications when they're supposed to in the dosages they're supposed to. And so the technology can not only manage that workflow, but through the dashboarding, the community cloud, we can present that to our clients in the same way our employees see it so that we can have goal alignment. They handle the movement of those people and where they're housed and where they're going and what their daily schedule is. We handle the medications and the medical processes. So by providing transparency into those operational processes, we get goal alignment with them and better outcomes for the folks.
What a novel idea, transparency in healthcare.
For sure.
When you talk about outcomes, just now we mentioned that word outcomes, I'd be curious, are there any, I know there's a lot of people you're serving, a lot of patients that you're serving, but are there any general examples of the kinds of outcomes that you see from this work, this kind of transparency delivering to these many people? Any thoughts come to mind?
So there's not a lot of benchmark data out there for us to benchmark against in corrections. So we kind of benchmark ourselves against community standards and community numbers, things like suicide rates, HEDIS measures, which are clinical outcome measures, and you know, some other things that are generally available like that. And then we have our own internal benchmarking between our facilities. So today with HEDIS, in many instances, we can demonstrate that our care exceeds the HEDIS measures that are out there in diabetic control, geriatric measures, things like that, because we control a whole lot more variables when you're incarcerated and our care is so well documented and well managed that we can manage those and demonstrate many instances that exceeds the outcomes in the community as a whole.
that can follow them when they're out of incarceration, right?
You hope. You know, you hope that those behaviors and the things that you learn while you're inside of our facilities is something you take out. In the cases of a jail, your average length of stay with us is about 20 days or so. In the cases of a prison, it could be for 10 years. So in a 10-year series of encounters, a lot better track records and longer-term impact on chronic conditions can be achieved.
This is all really important work, and we really appreciate you sharing the process and where you've been, where you're going. We'd love to hear more about maybe some of the initiatives. Maybe we can zoom in on some of the things that you're working on more specifically.
So from a technology standpoint, we've found two areas that we think we can improve outcomes in by applying some novel technologies. One of those is in self-harm and suicide prevention. We've developed an Android application that we're using in our facilities that we're building on for doing patient observations and behavioral monitoring. So we want to monitor, you know, what is their state? How are they performing in sessions and group encounters and things like that? We did a small study last year with some folks out of Vanderbilt to kind of measure the outcomes of our assessments. And could we predict based on people's behaviors or how they answered questions or activities that they participated in a propensity to self-harm so that we could intervene earlier, whether that be through counseling or just the way we approach that individual? So we'll use those data points and use those technologies to help us reduce the incidence of self-harm in the facilities.
Almost like a language processing. Is that, I'm hearing that right?
Those kinds of things, those technologies will apply as well as facial expression and the facial recognition technologies that are emerging have a huge opportunity in behavioral health and early interventions when someone's troubled or thinking of self-harm. But there's other data points like family conversations that they may have on a telephone that may agitate or depress or things like that. Outcomes of court appointments that they may have. So you go to court, you hear something bad, does that lead to a higher propensity to self-harm? We found correlations in things like number of incarcerations, the number of times you were incarcerated, and family interactions, right, are two early drivers in self-harm during early in their incarcerations.
So it's becoming evident to me as I hear you talk that because you didn't have just a standard clinical healthcare model and you didn't have a standard patient population, you had to look for really innovative ways to solve the problem. So you didn't limit yourself by the old technology. You used what you could and you built using newer technology, the things that you needed to address your unique needs. And I find that wonderful.
I think that's true. I think the passion that our business brings to this is more than just how do we extract money from this industry? Really, it's really how do you improve this? How do you disrupt it in some ways? And how do you do that in a way that manages cost appropriately, manages risk appropriately? You know, we hear this premise that healthy people cost less than sick people, right? So if we can take care to keep people healthy, to manage their disease states while they're with us, ultimately that'll lead to overall improved cost for our clients.
And improve society as a whole.
Absolutely, absolutely. The fact that people model behaviors in their life. If they're modeling the behaviors, if we're treating each other with dignity and respect, there's no reason that some percentage of those people will repeat that.
I think there's a lot of traditional healthcare that could learn from what you guys have done.
Well, it's great in that our environment allows us to do things that you can't do in the free world, right? That the fact that we have access to our patients all the time, right? That our patients have access to us all the time. It's very different than you and I walking around. If I want to see my doctor, I can call and make an appointment, and I may get in 3 months. Under our accreditation standards, if you put in a request for a doctor, we have 24 hours to see you and assess you. It's very different in the intensity and the velocity of the care that's given. And so you want to use that to the advantage of the patient, that if you're going to have those things, that if you have better outcomes as a result of that, you should have better outcomes. That should be the presumption, is better outcomes not adequate outcomes.
Bob, thank you so much for sharing your story, sharing what's happening. And we oftentimes on this podcast, on this journey, we've heard this theme of there's a lot of pain in healthcare, but with this conversation, there's certainly an optimism, and especially with how can we learn from each other and how can different industries within healthcare learn from each other to ultimately make people healthier. And embedded in this entire theme is technology. And so we've certainly heard your experience and your journey with that.
Thank you, Clark. I really appreciate the opportunity to sit and chat about this. And it's very rewarding career for me to be able to do what we do. And Tammy, thank you for what you do and what Versus 12 does. You've been an incredible partner for us in helping us move our sales force and our network development and our client engagement forward from where we were just a short time ago.
Well, thank you. This has been a fascinating discussion. Really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to How I Transform This, Success Stories of Transformation in Healthcare, presented by Versus 12. To learn more about how Versus 12 is best situated to transform the healthcare industry, and to follow along with this show, be sure to visit versus12.com/podcast. We'll see you next time.